Dr. Alveson, how are you?
Joe?
Yes, sir.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Friends with Benefits, WATD. Welcome to the show. Can you hear us?
I can hear you fine.
Excellent. So tell us, Dr. Alveson, you're from the Center of Telehealth, and what are some of the services that you offer?
Well, our Center for Telehealth has been in existence for 25 years now, since 1995. And started in New Mexico, just to mention to your listeners that New Mexico is the fifth largest state. So we're big geographically, but only 37th in population. So we're pretty rural. And yeah. So access to healthcare is a real challenge.
Now, from what I understand, you're a professor at the University of New Mexico and the medical director of the Center for Telehealth Involving in the planning and implementation for research and evaluation of telemedicine systems for New Mexico, as well as on a national and international scale. Is that your background?
That's correct. That's correct.
Excellent.
And also, as we've been in the trenches looking at how to make this work, I got involved nationally with the American Telemedicine Association based in Washington, D.C., wow. And I'm one of the past presidents of that association.
Wow. So you've seen a lot of healthcare, and I want to introduce you to my guest host, Mark Healy.
Doctor, good evening.
And my producer, Ben.
Hey, Mark.
Good evening, sir.
And hey, Ben.
And so, Dale, tell us, what are some of the international and global issues that you're seeing in healthcare around the world?
Well, one of the things we're finding out is that healthcare is a global issue. And more and more countries, developing countries and developed countries, are seeing the value of using these tools we call telemedicine. And I'll give you a couple examples, if I may, and just stop me along the way if you need to. But let's take a country like India.
Country.
India is now using telemedicine to connect 25,000 communities. They're doing 5,000 telemedicine encounters a day, and they've done over 10 million telemedicine encounters over the past 20 years. The point of that is that countries are realizing there's a value of using these technologies to reach people to improve their health care. And that's just one country. Recently, we've been working with the Congo in Africa around an issue you might not think about. We probably think about a lot of these African countries as being concerned about Ebola virus. They are. But in the Congo, it's gender-based violence against women and post-traumatic stress disorder. They only have 5 psychiatrists in the entire country. And they're looking at telemedicine as helping educate primary care providers and get access to behavioral health services. Latin America, Joe, another issue. I was just in Chile at the International Congress on the digital transformation of healthcare. They have a new administration there, and they see telemedicine as being part of the answer in solving the problems. Colombia, Argentina is using it to connect to the mines and the miners so that they can deliver healthcare where they're very remote and keep them on the job. Ecuador. We're reaching a community where diabetes is highly prevalent. Over half the population has diabetes, and we're looking at telemedicine to help give them access to care.
That's excellent.
Those are just some examples, and we can go on to some others.
Sounds like it's becoming a global network of healthcare, and it's, you know, getting...
Yeah, I think, you know, we obviously it's global, and that's the best part of it. If you think about it, as the doctor was expounding on, you know, that's the forefront of, I think, on our side. I think it's more of if can we spread that healthcare, but also contain our costs a little bit, then we benefit too. So as the world benefits from more exposure,
I think,
you know, in turn it helps us. So that's why you got to push for new technologies and helping others and, you know, reaching globally.
Now you're seeing more of a world health issue right now with the coronavirus.
Right.
And, you know, how do you prevent that from spreading? You must hear that all the time.
Right. We know the coronavirus right now, it's in the news, as everyone's aware of, I think, all of your listeners would be aware of this. It's now in 30 countries. It's highly contagious, has a high mortality rate, higher than this, than conventional flu, although that's an, another major global issue. But this particular virus is a huge problem. We can use telemedicine and these technologies to share our knowledge globally, quickly, just in time, and then in doing so, mitigate or decrease the spread of this virus. It's of great concern and another example of a global issue where we can work together using the tools of telemedicine.
Yeah, I agree. And there's so many components to that. And, you know, I'm looking at some of these questions that I want to ask you. And, you know, you see IT is a big, big issue in the medical field, in healthcare. And linking existing EHR systems with today's technology seems to be what everyone's trying to upload and get their hospital on the right network and to kind of take telehealth on as one of those deliverables, as one of those components to providing that healthcare. Are you seeing that on a global scale as well?
Oh, absolutely. If you look around countries, not only do they talk about telemedicine, but they talk about how do we integrate electronic health records in a meaningful way. And this is true in our own country, here in the United States. We have wonderful electronic health records. And I'll tell you, right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the university is on an electronic health record called Cerner, another big private nonprofit hospital is on Epic. We have another health group that works with Optum and the United Health Group that's on Allscripts. But these health electronic health records, they're all good, but they don't talk to each other. There is no interoperability. So if you're getting care in different systems that use different electronic health records, which could very well be the case, say, with telemedicine,
right?
We can't get a comprehensive view of your health care and your history. So I've been involved in what's called a health information exchange that is using international standards. Just to tell you the terms, it's called HL7, mm-hmm. FHIR. These are FHIR, healthcare interoperability resources. These are allowing us to merge information from all these different electronic health records so that your providers, as a patient, your providers get a comprehensive overview of your healthcare.
Yeah, it's a standardizing operating system. And if you're going to grow any kind of enterprise that can really handle the global markets that you're putting together, that's what you got to start with. And it's bringing those people together to willing to standardize on a platform that's going to benefit everyone. It's a challenge.
Absolutely. And Mark, we know that's a challenge, but yet for the good of patients and better patient care, we have to look at how we overcome that challenge
exactly. And
provide methods that give good interoperability. That is, share your information so that your providers have the right information at the right time when you need it. And this certainly is the case when we're providing telemedicine, just as when you see your doctor or other healthcare professionals in person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to be able to get a good view of your health history.
Yes.
That includes
and I think
look at
the fundamentals too of it, of just having an early diagnosis of something that you got an extra jump on just because of this this platform that you could get an evaluation of something going on, you know. Mm. It's tremendous.
Think about urgent care and emergency rooms
and
how
the cost
that
of
is
yes.
To, you know, we have a first responder that's hopefully still on the line with us, Captain Robert Radin from the Duxbury Fire Department.
Yep.
If he's on the line, I'd love to have him join in.
I'm here.
Hey,
Captain
Rob Radin. Welcome to the show. We have our guest on the show tonight, Dale Alvarez. He's a chief medical officer from the University of New Mexico. He's just telling us about some worldwide health issues and what other countries are dealing with for health care and how they're integrating telehealth and how important that is to them. And, you know, I appreciate you coming on the show as a
person that looking for information that saves lives, right?
Yeah,
you know,
quickly. in a first responder and how difficult that must be. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you use, you know, the health?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm on Duxbury Fire Department. I'm a firefighter and a paramedic there. You know, just talking about on a daily basis what we see. Not only are we firefighters, but we have paramedics out on the road. So if there's a fire call, we're on a fire truck. If there's a medical call, we're on an ambulance. On a daily basis, stuff we're seeing, you know, cardiac emergencies, strokes. We cover a big stretch of Route 3, so we see our fair share of trauma with motor vehicle accidents. And, of course, this time of year, one of the big calls is flu. That's pretty popular, especially with a lot of the facilities we cover.
It hasn't been getting the coverage because of the, you know, coronavirus that's been dominating that, and that doesn't make light of the flu.
But there's a new strain, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something we see yearly. And, you know, we have nursing homes, we have assisted living facilities, we have a lot of over 55 facilities in town. So, you know, we see a whole host of different medicals.
How important is it for you on the, say, if you go into an emergency room to have some information ready, you know, for, you know, the doctors who are receiving someone coming in or... You know, it's you know, they need to know the blood type and that type of information. Do you run into those problems getting that information?
Yeah, so we actually have, you know, you're talking about technology. One of the things that we have is we have ambulance reporting systems. So we use a computer and we get all the information from the patient or caregiver. All that stuff is put into a computer. So by the time we arrive at the hospital, we're able to give them a printed report as well as a verbal report. So we're able to give them their medications, their past medical history, their allergies,
what's common,
vital signs. Yeah.
That's important.
And we're able to, you know, like I always say to people is we bring the emergency room to the patient. So we have an ambulance loaded with great equipment where when we get there, we can actually set up shops. Someone who's really sick, we're able to start IVs. We're able to put breathing tubes in. We're able to do cardiac monitoring. We're able to do advanced procedures right there on site before we get to the ER. So when we get to the ER, this person's packaged up, ready to go, and we can give them a whole report. This is what we've done. This is where we are now. This is what you need to do.
Right. This is what we believe is going on, and, you know, and these are the vitals of what we're looking to. Yeah, it's a lot.
This is Dr. Alverson. I just want to mention how important that is. There is a period of time when the patient needs to get immediate care, and first responders, paramedics, are out there providing that care and saving lives. And in fact, more and more, we're actually seeing some use of telemedicine with first responders. They can communicate back to the emergency department about what they're seeing with patients. And make sure they're getting the right care and stabilization. And we're seeing that with cardiac events. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned stroke, and we're using telestroke to actually help the primary care hospital stabilize the patient before they're transferred.
Mm. Wow.
So it hopefully makes the job of the paramedic and EMT a lot easier because these places have more knowledge. I'll just mention really quickly, we have one for children. Many emergency departments are not seeing a lot of kids who are critically ill or suffer trauma, but we can connect back to larger centers, medical centers, to a pediatric emergency specialist to help them in their diagnosis and management and stabilization of the patient before they have to be transferred. So there's an intimate integration between what happens with first responders, the fire department, and paramedics and EMTs, and the use of these technologies has already been mentioned.
Right,
that's great.
It's critical, and it's you're right about the time because, as you know, Captain Raid in Duxbury, you know, you get called on the scene and you don't know what to expect. And we've had some great stories. You know, I know locally around here with your great team there at the Duxbury Fire Department, and they've been able to save some lives, and people appreciate that. And the technology that they're using and the training they're getting is really, it's professional people and it's top-notch training.
Absolutely. If I can just say, you know, technology is great, but nothing can replace a paramedic's training and experience, because in the end, that they need to be able to interact with this technology.
Sure, sure.
So,
and I think
we have some highly trained paramedics, and it's unfortunate, you know, obviously with HIPAA laws, we can't share a lot of the great things that sometimes we do. But sometimes when a person comes forward, that's when we're able to share those stories. Because on a daily basis, what our paramedics and EMTs are doing, it's great. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And
I might mention, Joe, if I could.
Please.
I totally agree. I mean, the technology, telemedicine's great. It serves a purpose.
Right.
But being in person with the patient with skilled personnel makes an incredible difference.
It's the foremost. It's just the technology to transfer that information as quick as possible. You can't replace that first responder, that first person.
You cannot.
You know, it's impossible. But how can we just transfer that information a little bit quicker, you know, it can save more lives.
Right. And I think that's where the technology can complement what the first responders are already doing.
What
provide them with more information and support.
You know, while we have an expert on the radio with us, our listeners would love to know, what are some of the preventive measures? What are some of the things you can do to help prevent someone who's in a cardiac arrest, or, you know, they're gasping for air a little bit, or they're having an asthma attack? I don't want to get too serious, but, you know, you're starting to hear a little bit about that.
Or a little disoriented.
What
did
you tell us?
Who's answering this? Do you want me to answer?
Yes, please, Captain Raider.
Oh, sure, absolutely. One of the most important things that I tell people all the time is this happens somewhere, you know, whether it's a hockey rink or whatnot, someone needs to take charge. You need somebody to actually say, all right, point to somebody and say, you call 911. Because what tends to happen, somebody goes down, somebody's not breathing, is everybody's kind of in shock and watching. And there might be somebody there who starts CPR, but sometimes people don't think, let's get 911 started, let's get paramedics, let's get EMTs going to help. So that's why I always say, somebody take charge. Somebody point to somebody. Have them call 911. And if you have somebody that's not breathing, one of the big things that we teach out there is the hands-on CPR. You don't have to breathe for the patient, but if you're pumping on that chest, it's very easy to learn. There's a lot of videos out there on, online, and that can save somebody's life. And if I can just tell a quick story.
Please.
My brother, who's just a little bit older than me, a couple of years ago, he had a cardiac event. He was at a racquetball court. And he went to go hit the ball, and he collapsed. The person he was playing with had learned CPR when he was in the Marines almost 20 years before. So he started pumping on his chest, yelling for help. He was in a racquetball court. No one could hear him. So he's like, I got to make a decision what to do. Luckily, he made the decision. Let's open the door, scream for help, went back, kept pumping on the chest. Somebody came in with a defibrillator. They hooked it up. He was shocked, and they saved his life. Those were two good Samaritans, people who had learned CPR a long time ago, knew how to use an AED. But again, those are things that people can do. CPR, hands-on CPR, is something that's very easy to learn, and it's one of those things that can very easily save somebody's life.
Yeah, and where can you find some classes to just get updated or certified?
You know, a lot of fire departments offer it. We do it a lot for town employees. We've done it for citizens. We've done it for some of the schools in town.
Sure.
Senior center. And like I was saying with the AEDs, the automatic external defibrillators, which can shock somebody, that's one of those things to look for when you go to a facility, when you go to that hockey rink, see if they have one. Know where it is. If you go to the gym, know where those are, just in case something happens.
Yeah.
And for the most part, all of those talk you through like you've never done it before. They're so helpful. And you can't hurt somebody when you do it. They know if it's a shockable rhythm.
Excellent. That is great advice. What a great guest. Thank you, Captain Radin, and thank you, Dr. Alverson. You two are great tonight. I think we got a world.
Yeah. We took a quick slingshot at it.
And local, it really worked well. Thank you both. Thank you for calling in tonight.